Today we welcome Paige Toon, author of 5 Years From Now. She has written 12 fiction novels, as well as a 3-part spin-off series for young adults. Paige has sold well over 1 million books worldwide. Today we chat about all types of love in her new novel and the importance of setting. I'm your host, Danny V. If you love this episode, why not check out our back catalogue, where we speak to an array of incredible authors around the world.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Paige. It was so wonderful reading your book, 5 Years From Now. I really, really enjoyed it. So welcome.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
I really enjoyed the idea of how much life changes 5 years from now and how you gain more insight as time passes. And in your letter to the readers down under in the beginning of the book, you credit your father for saying it to you when you were a teen. How did this idea of 5 years from now mature and develop and end up as the central idea in this novel?
So the whole idea of the 5 years from now thing, you know, happened when I was a teenager and I was going through a really difficult time at school. And my dad said to me, look, 5 years from now, you'll look back and understand why this happened. And, you know, then my dad used to be a racing driver. So at the time he likened it to when he lost his Formula One drive to Niki Lauda. He has this sort of like funny way of, you know, giving me examples of, you know, things that might have happened to him, which are completely out of the sort of realm of normal human beings. So, but it was funny, but he was right, because I ended up messing up my A-levels, which is like the English equivalent of the HSE. Mm-hmm. And I went to a different university and ended up meeting my husband there. And we now have 2 beautiful children, and they wouldn't exist if it hadn't been for me messing up my schoolwork and my exams. So that was really, that sort of stuck with me. And I've always thought of that over the years. You know, there have been several times and I've just remembered, you know, his advice. And you know, I tend to sort of look back and in hindsight and try to see a positive out of a negative. But the other part of the story came from a friend of mine who was telling me about her daughter. And she had a really, really good friend. And she said that she thought that the parents were going to split up and that they were going to move away, and couldn't, you know, wasn't sure whether or not the children would stay in touch. And she just found this really sad. And so I started thinking about, you know, it just sort of gave me the idea of a pen pal, you know, thinking about a pen pal sort of situation. And then that developed into a whole story, like a completely different, you know, I mean, ideas come from anywhere and then they sort of will just spawn an entire different plot, you know, and my story is very different to that situation. But my characters, Nell and Van, they meet when they're 5 years old, when they're, you know, her father and his mother fall in love. And suddenly, you know, Nell has a sibling, which she never had before. And over the course of 5 years, they become the best of friends. You know, they are like siblings. And then something happens to tear them apart. And one of them is sent to the other side of the world. And they meet up again 5 years later. And the story continues like that for almost 4 decades. Like, it goes on for a long time.
Although it's a novel about relationships and love, it was a really authentic story about the messiness of love. You know, the bad timing, the multiple relationships, the failed marriages, the people we love in different parts of the world. Was it your intention to convey love in this real, messy, raw way?
I think all of my books, I try to be as realistic as possible. And, you know, sometimes things change when you're writing them. I think initially, you know, my idea for this, it had a different ending. Mm-hmm. And when I sort of really thought about it, because I let the books breed, you know, for about a year and a half before I come to write them. Mm-hmm. And then it just, I don't know, something sort of clicked and changed in me. And I just, you know, I knew that it was going to go down a different route. And yeah, for me, it has to be realistic. And, it, you know, even if I'm writing about rock stars, you know, I still try and make it realistic. And, you know, just life isn't always black and white. You know, there are so many different shades of grey. And yeah, so I just wanted to feel authentic to the reader.
Yeah, well, it did for me, certainly. I mean, as we grow older, we have more and more of these experiences, and it was nice to have this reflected in the novel. It's actually comforting to think, yeah, you know, all these things didn't work out for me as well, and it's okay, because that's what real life is like. And you've sold an incredible amount of novels across the world, like over 1 million. Do you think that's what it is that resonates with people, the reality of it?
I think it is. Like, that's one thing that, you know, I hear from my readers all the time is how relatable my characters are and how they really feel like they're inside the characters' heads and experiencing the things that they're experiencing and seeing the things that they're seeing. I've heard that a lot, actually. That's one of the words that, you know, readers tend to use is relatable. So, which is really lovely, you know, but you know, I connect with the characters when I'm writing them. I feel their pain as I'm writing it. You know, I've always sort of liking being an author almost to being a character actress, you know, like when you have to get into the part of a character. And, you know, it's the same when you're writing. You know, there's this one point in the book where I literally sat and stared at a blank, like, page on my computer for a whole, like, day and night because I just couldn't get her to get out of the car and go and, you know, have that kind of climactic scene. You know, I really struggled. I felt so, you know, I remember going and having a massage that night, actually, and the person is a friend who massages me, and she was just saying, gosh, you know, I can really feel like this, you know, this energy coming from you tonight, you know, you're stressed. And I'm like, I'm really stressed.
I'm feeling my character's pain.
Yeah, you know, I really do. It's weird. Like, they feel real to me, and I know they feel real to, you know, a lot of my readers, you know, yeah. So you know, you just want to connect people to a story and connect people and just take them outside of their own lives for a bit and, you know, help them see something, you know, see something completely different and hopefully be a bit of a page turner and, you know, an enjoyable read along the way.
It was interesting too, the idea of timing. I mean, it's not a very romantic ideal and it's often missing from rom-coms, but timing is everything. You know, love is not everything, it's timing, isn't it? And I think that was reflected so strongly in the novel.
That's true. I mean, you hear stories so often of, you know, these long-term relationships that, you know, these people who have been together sort of like 10 years and then they break up and within a year one of them's gone and got married to somebody else, you know, and you sort of hear that quite a lot. And, you know, people say, you know, it's just down to timing a lot of the time. You know, it's just someone, you know, just at that right moment, you know, right time, it kind of comes together and works. And, you know, for my characters, they, you know, they have other sort of various different things that keep them apart, namely being, you know, living on opposite sides of the world. But, you know, there are other relationships in there as well, you know, when you sort of meet up every 5 years. And, yeah, there's this line in the book, sometimes two people are meant to be together and sometimes they're not. And, I do sort of think if you fight hard enough at something, then you know, you can have that outcome that you want. But sometimes it's just, you know, there's a reason for why life keeps getting in the way, and sometimes you just have to let it go and, you know, move on and sort of look at other sort of, you know, opportunities. And it's hard to, you just want to live and love, you know, and be happy, I think.
And I think the biological clock is also a factor in that timing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit easier these days, I think. Yeah. You know, more and more people have children later on, you know.
Absolutely.
But it's still, yes, I guess it's just what you want for your life and for their childhood, and, you know, it's each their own.
Because the novel began when Nell and V and then and later becomes Van were 5, it really captured the innocence and ease of life when you're a kid and the simplicity of it. And I love it when they say, Nell and I are going to get married. Nell nodded. They had agreed to this when they were 6. It was an accepted fact. Was it really nice capturing the innocence of childhood?
It was, you know, and that was a lovely, they were lovely sections to write because I don't normally write in the third person like that. You know, I'm always inside the character's head and sort of living and, you know, breathing along with them. And so that was a different style for me, that 5 and that 10 years section, you know, writing about it, looking out in at them, you know, sort of seeing the things that they do. And, you know, there were things I pulled on my own childhood, like, you know, I grew up on a river when I was here in England. You know, we used to spend half the year in Australia and half the year in England. And I remember catching a duckling that had lost its mother, you know, and so it was quite fun sort of writing about different things. You know, platypus was the name of our boat, you know, so I was sort of like doing a little bit of own experience. But yeah, I loved that, you know, and it was really fun, like I say, to sort of write this, you know, write from the perspective of looking in at the two characters and being able to sort of talk from both, you know, like sort of almost from both their perspectives and see things a little bit better. I thought in the case of 5 years and 10 years, it would just be too hard to be inside the head of a 5 or a 10-year-old. You know, just it could become annoying for the reader. So, it was sort of fun.
It can be hard to capture that younger voice, I think, as well, authentically.
I think so, yeah. And it's just very restrictive. Mm. You know, you can't describe the setting. You know, I wanted to be able to describe this beautiful sort of Cornish river setting. You know, this cottage on this hill, sort of looking out down across the river, and you know, and just sort of be able to capture a little bit more. And I thought, you know, inside the head of a child, they don't understand as much, or they don't sort of, you know, it's harder to sort of see a, you know, sense of place quite as much. So, yeah, I just sort of tried to encapsulate that as much as possible.
And then, of course, at 15, this is when things start to get really complicated, and it actually becomes the catalyst of everything that happens after. And how did you then capture the teen years? Did you almost have to redevelop each character every 5 years?
Well, actually, it's just funny, you know, when you, because I've written for young adults as well, I've written a whole series of books, you know, called About the Accidental Life of Jesse Jefferson, you know, and it's a spin-off from one of my adult characters. And so I've been inside the head of a teenager before, but it's weird, you know, you don't, it's not a conscious thought or an effort, you know, you're inside that character's head and she's 15 years old. So that just, it's just like a shift in consciousness for me, you know, I can imagine, and also I wrote this story, you know, really handily to a timeline of my own life. So I could literally sort of like think, okay, when I was 15, what songs was I listening to? You know, what was I doing with my mates? You know, it was all about house parties and discos, you know, in the front living room and things like that. And so that was kind of, it was actually very easy. And then again, jump forward 5 years, Nell's at university, she's 20. And again, you know, I could sort of, you know, I felt that switch of her growing up a little bit and, you know, seeing things a little bit different, but still being younger than she thinks she is, you know. And again, you know, sort of every 5 years from then on, you know, it's very easy, I find, to get into the head of a character, no matter how old they are.
I loved the reference to music throughout. We're of a very similar age. And I loved how, because it brought me back to my child and went, oh, yeah, that was what you were listening to that decade, you know. So I really liked the element of that. It was really special.
The film references as well, you know, like I remember, you know, The Neverending Story, yes, and, you know, Loving Atreyu, and, you know, there's a, you know, little boy who's, you know, like fighting monsters and stuff. And, you know, I kind of likened Van, you know, to this little boy. And then there's another little one who's a bit more geeky. And, you know, they meet a boy when they're sort of 10 and, you know, it reminds, you know, he reminded me of these sort of characters. So, and then Dirty Dancing when you're 15, you know, I mean, the amount of times, yep, I watched that film when I was younger.
Yep, I can definitely relate. Now, yeah, at some points I thought I was reading a timeline of my own life too. I was like, hey, so many parallels. Now, they were beautifully drawn characters, and I loved both Nell and Van. What was the process of your character development? I know you say that you let them sit for about a year, but then what happens? Do you just kind of let them drive the story and sort of progress authentically, or how do you do this?
Yeah, I have an idea in my head of what they're like, and then they just, you know, they develop their own voices as they go along. And, you know, in this case, it was a very easy book to write, actually. I didn't sort of hit any writer's block or sort of any moments, I don't think, even, you know, where I was thinking, oh, this is slightly going off on the wrong track. But in the past, it has done with previous books. You know, I remember having a very clear idea of Will from Chasing Daisy, for example, my third book. Mm-hmm. He's a racing driver. And, you know, I remember sort of having this very clear vision of what he was like. And when I came to write it, he ended up being a bit sort of grittier than, and I thought, no, that's not right. That's not how I wanted him to be. And I sort of, you know, ended up going back and rewriting all of his section to get it in the way that, you know, I'd imagine. But with Nell and Van, it just organically felt very right, you know, straight away. And they just sort of developed and grew, you know. It was kind of beautiful to, you know, see the way that they did grow as they grew older. And, you know, it was sort of slightly surprising. A few points, you know, I was sort of surprised by Van, by the way he sort of, you know, matured, and he used to be very jealous as a child, and he kind of becomes much more grown up and adult about things as he goes on. And I wasn't really expecting him to be quite so nice. <I think>.
And so your writing process, do you plot it out as well, or do you just kind of let the characters go, or do you have some kind of idea?
You know, because I think about the book for a good year in advance, I know pretty much exactly how it's going to go. And, you know, the story will always take you off. I don't sit down and write chapter by chapter, this is what's going to happen. I would never do that. And there have been times in the past where I've been 20,000 words from the end, One Perfect Summer, for example. You know, I was 20,000 words from the end. I was like, I don't think this is as clear cut as I thought it was going to be in my head. And I let the end of the book write itself. And uh-huh. I did the same thing again with 13 Weddings. I wasn't 100% sure who she was going to end up with. And I just thought, I'm just going to just let it go. Just let them sort of, you know, carry on with what they, you know, what they're doing, and just see where this story takes me. And that was really liberating. Like, I love doing that, but it's quite rare to have a situation where you really aren't quite sure, you know, and then the reader gets completely surprised as well.
It must be really interesting to surprise yourself at those points and go, oh, I didn't know that was going to happen.
No, I love that. You know, and with One Perfect Summer, I remember writing an ending, and I always cry at the end of my books. I mean, this one was something else. Like, this one, I was like a sobbing mess. It was ridiculous. But, you know, most of the time, you know, I have like sort of happy endings. I cry. It doesn't matter. And you know, I remember with One Perfect Summer, I didn't really cry, and I was like, oh, okay, that's the ending. And then I went to bed and I woke up in the morning and said, no, that wasn't the ending. You know, and then I wrote the end, and then I cried.
So if you don't cry, your book's not finished.
Yeah, so basically, that's what I've come to understand.
Well, I kind of think that 5 years from now, there can be a sequel and we can keep going from 40 to like 80.
We never know. I'll come back to one day. I'd love to write, both Nell and Van have children in the story, and yeah. I'd love to write their story one day, even if it's just a short story. It'd be nice to sort of see what happens. You know, they might be the ones who sort of like carry it on, you know. Mm.
I saw the parallel with Libby and Luke.
I have this newsletter called The Hidden Page, you know, which I, you know, if anyone wants to sign up, it's at pagetoon.com. And I send out like free short stories occasionally. Mm-hmm. I haven't written one for ages, but or I might write like an extra chapter of the novel. And I'd love to do that for this one. You know, I'd love at some point to write, you know, write their story and, you know, release it as a, you know, just a little freebie for readers. So, yeah, sort of that often happens with my books.
I would love that too. So if you want to continue Neil and Van, I would love to read a follow-up. I was going to ask about that as well. With your website, I discovered that your characters often make appearances in other little stories. Tell us about that.
Yeah, they do. It was something I started with Johnny B. Goode, my second novel. I wrote Lucy in the Sky, and I really wanted people to know, you know, like had that little extra epilogue, you know, of what had happened to Lucy after the end of the book. And as I was sort of finishing Lucy in the Sky, I thought, hang on, that character who was like her stepbrother's girlfriend, I've really, you know, only mentioned a couple of times in the book, but I thought she could be the character from the next novel. And then that gives her a chance to speak to Tom, her ex-boyfriend by this point, and find out how Lucy and Nathan are. And so so I did that just as a little nod to fans. It doesn't spoil anything for the reader who hasn't read that book. They'd just skip over that sentence and wouldn't even think twice about it. But for the people who had read Lucy in the Sky, you know, they loved it. They loved having this little mention. And so I just continued doing that with all of my novels. You know, I sort of occasionally just do a little cameo that, again, like I say, the books completely stand alone, but for a reader who had read my previous novels, they would notice that little mention and, you know, just get a little update of the story. And, you know, I've had a lot of people loving these sort of interlinks and all these inter sort of connections. But actually, with 5 years from now, there isn't a single character there that links to any of my other books. And a part of that was because of the timeline, because, you know, obviously I write my books in what feels like real time. And because this started back in 1975, really, you know, when she was like born, but 1980 is when she's 5 years old. And, you know, over a timeline of sort of almost four decades, there weren't too many crossover points that could have worked with my other novels. And I'll never force a link unless it feels organic. Mm. And one just didn't sort of like crop up. So I'm expecting to get a little bit of stick from my readers for it.
That's a wonderful idea.
Where's the link? You know, and be sort of cross about it. But
there's no link, but there will be a sequel, right?
Well, don't know about that, but we'll see.
Short story sequel, maybe. We'll hang out for it. The novel really focuses on the complexity of family too, and I love how Nell's dad becomes Van's other dad, and it's quite reflective of society, isn't it, how we kind of merge into and make our own families.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, family doesn't have to be a blood relative, you know, it's someone who's just really important to you and maybe is a strong part of your life for a long, you know, a long time. And certainly, you know, Van ends up with two dads, effectively. You know, he's got dad in Australia, and Andy, who's Nell's dad, you know, raises him for, you know, a good 5 years of his life. And they have this, you know, strong bond that just continues throughout the rest of the book. I completely agree with you on that.
Mm. I also want to talk about setting. I found so many parallels with this, or it just resonated so much with me. It's set mostly in Cornwall and some in Uluru. And these are two places that I visited in my life, and I absolutely adored both of them. And they're just kind of these magical places. Like whenever I think of a calm time in my life, I think of my time in Cornwall. Like I just loved it. And it's, I found it really funny that I was reading. I'm like, yes, I understand, you know, both of these places. Did you choose them because they were kind of these magical, unique places, or what was the reason for your setting?
Well, a lot of the time I write books because a lot of the time I choose to write a book that I'm going to go on holiday to. Like if I'm going on a big family holiday, And, you know, we'll sort of choose that place depending on where I'm planning on setting my next book, because, you know, I don't go there. I wouldn't want to take 2 weeks away from the kids to go off and, you know, just do a research trip. You know, I'll make it part of the holiday and then I'll just go off and have a little bit of time and, you know, do some notes and, you know, write about the places that I see. And we went to Cornwall the summer before last. And I hadn't started writing the last piece of my heart at that point. And we went and it was just a, you know, normal family holiday. We were camping. We had a camper van, Hermie. And as we were driving out of the campsite, I was like, oh, my God, this is where Bridget should be coming to. You know, this that story is about she basically takes on a commission to finish writing a book that another author had started. And the author had passed away. And so she has to finish this book and she has to move down to Cornwall. So she's close to the author's late husband, you know, in order to finish off this book. And so she goes and stays in a camper van for the week. And so I wrote that completely based on my own experience of staying in this beautiful sort of Cornish campsite, you know, right by the river and the ocean. You know, it was amazing. And then we just loved Cornwall so much. I was desperate to go back again. You know, I really... just really, really wanted to go back for my summer holiday the following year with the kids, you know, spend 2 weeks this time, get a cottage. And so we just, you know, I just decided then and there, you know, I'm going to set the next book 5 years from now. She can grow up in on this, you know, cottage on the river. And so we went back there in the summer. And honestly, it just, it really feels like, even though I've only been to Cornwall a couple of times in my life, but it feels like home in this weird sense. You know, I think because you've written about somebody else living there, then it just has that really magical kind of quality. And yeah, I'm pining for it. You know, I'm desperate to go back.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I feel the same way. I've only been there once and I think I was only there for a week or two, but it's just some places just stay with you and it doesn't matter how long you've been there. I mean, for me, Uluru was the same. I honestly, I don't know what I was expecting when I went to Uluru. I just, you know, I wasn't that excited to go. I just went. But when you go there, it's just this kind of magical, spiritual place, you know, and I thought it was captured really well.
Oh, good. Well, I was exactly the same. You know, I went to Uluru as a child and loved it. And then we went back for a family holiday with my parents and my brother and his family, Easter before last. And so again, I already go to a place and then not write about it because I like to write about places I've actually visited, so it feels more real and I'm more connected to the characters. So I'll always try to include, you know, a place in a story. And I thought, well, this would work perfectly for that section. And, you know, and Nell feels the same when she goes there. She wasn't that excited about this big rock in the middle of nowhere. But when you go there, I mean, it's just so stunning, like up close, like the greenery around the rock, you know, it's like this oasis, you know, and this massive sort of, you know, gorgeous glittering under the sun, you know, this incredible sort of red rock, you know, and I was just blown away. Like it was much more beautiful than I had remembered it to be. And much more beautiful than I ever could have expected it to be. So, yeah, I definitely had to include that in the book.
Yeah. I think it also symbolised the growing distance between them too, because I don't think you can get too much, you know, two different places, can you, than Uluru and Cornwall?
No, that's right. Yeah, completely. Yeah, it could definitely be more different. And, you know, Van struggles a little bit in Uluru because he's a surfer, so he's like, couldn't be further away from the ocean if he tried.
I also liked how the novel reflects how we change, not only throughout life, but once we have children, because there are some things that we won't do anymore and things that we sacrifice for our children, and our happiness is no longer the most important thing. You know, it's our children. And I think it really captures that journey once you have them. And Van says, things aren't so black and white anymore, not like when we were kids. Was it such a challenge to capture this timeline? I mean, you said it reflected your own life, but I mean, you change so much when you have kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So that, you know, I can write about that from personal knowledge and personal experience and the feeling that you have about your own children. Like you say, nothing is more important and you would do anything to protect them and, you know, keep them safe. And motherhood for me was like a massive, massive change. I knew that I was always going to love being a mum. You know, I'd always wanted kids. I had no idea how impactful it would be until it actually happened. And then you're just like, holy hell, you know, I would... You know, if anything happened to this little baby, you know, I can't imagine going on and living, you know, like it was so powerful, especially in those early days, you know, when you're like in this little bubble, you know, and you just feel like your heart's going to explode, you know. That changed things for them, for sure. You know, both of them, you know, when you do that 5-year jump and you come back to them both and they're both parents, you know, that for me, I could certainly really relate to.
I like that idea of being unprepared for it because you're just living in this kind of selfish life, doing whatever you want, and then all of a sudden you're like, nah.
Yeah.
Things.
I think it maybe happens a little bit, you know, a little bit earlier than for a lot of people these days. You know, people, you know, seem to be having babies a lot later, you know, in their sort of late 30s or whatever sometimes. Certainly a lot of, that's the case for a lot of my friends. And but for them, you know, they both have babies when they're 25. Mm-hmm. So that for me sort of felt a little bit early. And yeah, so by the time they're 30, they've already had to take a big step up, you know, a big step up in terms of maturity and, you know, what's important. I didn't have kids till I was in my early 30s. Yeah. So, you know, 32 and 35. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a little bit different.
So we could be selfish for a lot longer.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you followed your father around because, as we mentioned before, he was a racing car driver and you grew up between England, Australia and America. How did that influence your writing, do you think?
In a big way, it's influenced the fact that I like writing about travel in different countries. Mm-hmm. I always want to go to the places that I'm writing about, you know, or revisit them. And so that's, you know, I've written a lot of books set in Australia and America and obviously also England, because that's where I'm based now. I remember once, you know, an aeroplane pilot said, you know, we used to have those little booklets that the pilot would sign, you know, with every flight we took. And, you know, Mum would always sort of send them up, you know, and we'd get to go up and, you know, this is the back in the days when you could go up into the cockpit and stuff, you know. And I remember this one captain, you know, writing down this comment when I was about 12 years old. Jesus, this kid's flown more than I have. Because we used to like to travel so much, you know. And all those little tiny interconnecting flights, you used to have to like maybe connect six times, you know, just to get from America to Australia. And, mm-hmm. you know, my mum would religiously get the captain to fill out every single one. It was such a lovely thing to have now, to kind of look back and, you know, see these different routes we had to take via Alaska and Hawaii and, you know, Russia, even, I remember, you know, it was pretty amazing.
And there were no aspirations for yourself to get into a racing car?
No. Definitely not. It did frighten us slightly when my son was born because he walked so early. Like, you know, I mean, he took his first steps at 8 months and was walking properly by 10.
Yeah.
And he used to had this little car that he'd sit in and run around in. And, you know, from 6 months, he was like racing around the house. And the way that he would take the corner, going from the hallway into the living room, it was phenomenal. You know, like this car was big and he wouldn't touch the sides of the door frame. You know, he'd just like zip in and was like, oh my God. My mum was horrified. She's like, no more racing drivers. No way.
Do something safe. Be a poet or something.
Exactly. Stick to writing on it.
That's right. Now, you've written 12 adult fiction novels and a 3-part spin-off series for young adults and 3 ebooks, but can you cast your mind back to your initial publishing journey and tell us what that was like?
Oh, that was amazing. So Lucy in the Sky is a story about this girl who's caught between two countries, Australia and England, and really that really resonates with me because at the point that I came up with the idea, my parents and my brother had both moved back to Australia. I was settled in England with a great job at a magazine and my husband to be, you know, he wasn't my husband at the time, but, you know, it was a serious relationship. And, you know, I was felt very divided and very torn. And so I sort of had this idea about writing this character who was torn between, you know, two countries, two men, opposite ends of the world. And then, you know, I can't remember how the idea came to me. I might have been on a plane and I was just told to switch off my phone. And as they usually do, you know, and I imagined, you know, my character, Lucy, so sitting on this plane, being told by the air hostess, switch off your phone. And as she switches it off, she sees a message there from her boyfriend's phone saying, I've slept with your boyfriend 4 times in the last month.
Oh.
And the air hostess is standing over her saying, turn off your phone now. So she has to switch off. And then she has this horrible 24-hour flight down to Australia, not knowing if her boyfriend has cheated. She tries to call him in Singapore and, you know, gets quite drunk. And, you know, so it's just this, you know, and then she's down in Australia for 2 weeks and has very strong feelings for this young surfer dude. And is not sure quite whether or not to believe her sort of boyfriend back home, you know, what's going on. And so she ends up feeling very, very sort of torn. So I had this idea. I started writing it during a very, very long delay. We were in America and our flight was delayed for like 20 hours or something. And I just started writing it. I probably only got about 3 pages in. And I worked at a magazine at the time, a Heat magazine, which, you know, was sort of right at the cusp of when all those celebrity magazines were just like flying off the shelves. Like, it used to sell like 600,000 copies a week. It was a really amazing time to, you know, to be working in that sort of industry at the time. And I used to deal with all of the reviews and the book pages. And so I got to know a few different people from different publishing houses. became friends with a couple of publicists who I just loved for their straight talking nature. You know, they would always just say, oh, you know, this book isn't very heat, but she's lovely, you know, if you can include her please soon. You know, it was just lovely, it was just really nice. And I went out for lunch with Nige, one of these publicists, and he said to me, you should write book club, you know, you get a book deal easy. And you know, that's not actually true, as lots of friends have found out since, but but you know, in my case, I sort of said, well, I do have an idea, and he was like, okay, tell me. And you know, he was probably sort of panicking slightly, thinking, oh no, you know, now I've got myself into this. And I told him the idea about Lucy in the Sky, you know, this girl who gets on this flight, gets a text message, and then has this terrible sort of flight. And he said, I love it. You know, he said, I'm going to go back and tell my publisher. And so literally 5 minutes after I got back to the office, there was an email from him saying, she loves it, she wants to meet you. An email from her saying, I love it, I want to meet you. And we arranged to meet a week later for breakfast. And in the meantime, I wrote the first three chapters of the book, a 5,000-word synopsis. Considering I'd found it really hard to write more than three pages, I think it was just that fear of, this is, no one's ever going to read this, it's not going to be good enough, you know, I'm never going to get it published. And it was my lifelong dream to write books, you know, and I kind of kept that secret quite close to my heart. I didn't really talk about it because it hurt too much to think that it might never happen. And so, you know, I was just too terrified to start that book and properly write it. And so suddenly, you know, I've got this meeting with a publisher and the words just flew out of me. And she met up, she wanted to have a read of it. And 2 days later, she offered me a two book deal. And in the meantime, my brother also came up with the title Lucy in the Sky, because I didn't have a title. And so my heroine was going to be called something completely different. And, you know, my brother said, Lucy in the Sky. And I was like, Lucy, quickly changed her name to Lucy. And that's my title. And so I was offered this two book deal. You know, within sort of 10 days of telling Nigel that I had a book idea. And then he said to me, I'd tell him you can write it by Christmas and have it out next April. Now, this was September.
Oh, wow.
Time job. And I was like, okay, how about I write it by Christmas and we have it out next April? And my editor said, well, we don't normally do that. We normally work to a year and a half timeline. But if you, you know, if you think you can do it, okay, yeah, let's do it, you know. So I was suddenly committed, and it was the best thing possible for me, because I had this pressure on me, and it was just it was one of the happiest times of my life. Like, just, you know, writing during lunch breaks, before work, you know, all weekend. I just, you know, I ended up writing it in 2.5 months. I had 3.5 and I wrote it in 2.5, and the momentum just carried through, you know. And it was a really good time for Heat magazine, you know. It was very well known in the industry, and so, you know, just people paid a bit of notice. I had Marion Keyes, who was like my favorite author, and I'd reviewed her books, and I said, is there any chance you would read it, possibly give me a quote? And she did. She said, I never quote anymore, because, you know, I was asked too much, but I'm going to make an exception for you. And you know, it was the most amazing experience. And I had a few wobbly moments when I delivered the book, when I was just thinking, oh my God, everybody who I know is going to read this book and be judging me on and think it's rubbish. And, you know, and I was really terrified. And then I remember getting Marion's quote back through and saying, you know, her saying how much she loved the book and, you know, gave me a really nice, you know, long email telling me all the different things that she liked about it. And it just made me, oh, thank goodness, you know. And then I think the next highlight was just starting to read all my Amazon reviews, you know, and my online reviews from readers, like with people who didn't know me from Adam, you know, and were just reading the book, you know, completely based on, you know, what, and writing a review based on completely what they thought. It wasn't to sort of tell me. I don't think I would have ever fully believed a friend who sort of said, yeah, it's really good. You know, you need to be told that by complete strangers who don't have any loyalties to you whatsoever. And yes, that was my publishing strategy. You know, I didn't have an agent for the first of 6 years, and then I did get a literary agent. And actually, I've gone back to being unagented again, because I just really love this natural, you know, relationship I have with my editor. And, you know, it was a bit difficult having somebody else in amongst that, you know, in that mix. But yeah, so it's been a bit of a roller coaster. Yes,
that is one wonderful story, too. I'm glad I asked. Now, you have a book signing in Australia in May next year. Where are you going to be in Australia?
Well, hopefully I'm going to be doing a whole tour. I have a new publisher down in Australia now, mm-hmm. Penguin Random House, mm-hmm. And this amazing new publicist, an amazing new editor. And so, yeah, they've basically said, let's do this tour of Australia. I've had so many readers, you know, want to come and meet me in the past. And we did one in Melbourne, and, you know, 50 people turned up with a week's notice. And so that was really lovely. And so just, I need to go, and I'd love to go and do like all of the major cities in Australia. So well, that's the plan. Wonderful. And yeah, I'll be keeping everybody posted on pagetoon.com. So
well, I'll put it in my calendar now. So what's next for you? Have you got another book in the pipeline or some ideas? Are you having a bit of a rest? Do you have to sort of work this novel first, or what's happening?
I haven't started the next one yet, but that's been breathing in my head for a good sort of 6 months or so. It starts off, it's about a girl who is from, she lives in a small backwater town in Australia, like a mining town, like in the middle of nowhere. And she has had to look after her sick grandmother for, you know, a big chunk of her life. And she's now in her, around about the age of 30, and she's always wanted to travel and she's never been able to. And when her grandmother passes, all of the townsfolk bring her stones that she can sell to raise the money for traveling. And, you know, she goes back to try and find her father, and she goes to Italy. She spends some time in Rome. Her father's sort of stepson, you know, sort of guy. She has like a, you know, gets to know him, and there's a bit of a, he has a bit of a dark side, you know, which I won't bother going into. But yeah, it should be a really good one. And I need to go I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's all the fjords basically in Sweden. I'm planning on going there this summer to do a bit of research about base jumping and stuff like that. He's got a bit of a wild side, this character.
Oh, that sounds so amazing.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully it will be. Yeah,
you can add a few more stamps to your passport, not that you need any more.
yeah, crazy. We're hoping to go there in a camper van actually, which would be really fun with the kids. Yeah. And just sort of start touring a little bit more around Europe. So that's the plan.
That'd be great. Well, I really look forward to your new work. I loved 5 years from now. I just thought the evolution of love was so beautiful. I thought the characters were drawn so well. And like I said, it could be read as anyone's timeline of life, I think, of those missed opportunities, or of love that didn't quite work out, or of love that did work out in the end. So it was a lovely read. So thank you for writing it.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for your lovely review. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.